Hi, this is Maria Olson. You may know me from Trophy Heads or Starry Eyes and maybe Paranormal Activity 3. And I want to welcome you to Anthony T's Horror Show because it's an awesome show.
Hi, my name is Jessica Cameron and you're listening to Anthony T's Horror Show.
Hey, fellow horror fans. This is Troy Escamilla, the director of Party Night and Mrs. Claus. And you are listening to Anthony T's Horror Show. Enjoy.
Welcome to an edition of Anthony T's Horror Show. This is the Scares That Cares Weekend 6 preview show, I won't be going into any news items. Yes, I know there are a lot of happenings at San Diego Comic-Con. I know there is guest announcer Rockin' Shock. I know the titles for the new Halloween films are released. I know there are a bunch of trailers dropped for It and Three from Hell, but this is the Scares That Cares preview show, so I will get to all those news items next episode. Now, Scares That Cares Weekend 6 will be the first time that I visit a Scares That Cares event. I've heard a lot of good things about this convention, and one of the things that really attracts me to this convention is that this is all for charity, as Scares That Cares does a lot with fighting childhood cancer, breast cancer, and helping burn victims. So yours truly will be heading down with the Doc Discussions gang, Philip Perrone and Michael Darwin, to Williamsburg, Virginia, August 2nd through the 4th. As this is for a very good cause, definitely go to www.scaresthatcares.org and contribute money. If you're not going to the convention, please contribute at least $1, $5, anything that can help this charity out, as I really think this is a very good charity, as I've seen them a couple times over at Rockin' Shock, and they seem to be very nice people, and I like what they're doing. With that, in this episode, I will be talking to filmmaker Patrick Rea about the two films that will be showing at Scares That Cares Weekend 6, Rattle and It's Hell Getting Old. Then afterwards, I'll have an open discussion with Michael Darwin from Doc Discussions about the upcoming Scares That Cares Weekend 6 convention. And I'll also have a film recommendation from one of the guests that will be attending Scares That Cares Weekend 6. I'll give you a hint. It's a film that I want Scream Factory to release on Blu-ray, since they're releasing Paramount Pictures horror films. With that, I'll be back with my interview with Patrick Ray.
Want to learn more about horror directors? With a lighthearted look at three of their movies? Meet fearless podcaster Gore Blimey.
I've been unsettled by bats in the past and startled by parrots, and I've even been known to jump at the odd cockatoo.
Discover horror films that are classics and others, too.
There's a topless aerobics massacre, an exploding rock singer, cannibals, nude martial arts, a deep-fried prostitute.
But it's not all silliness. You'll get proper movie breakdowns, opinion, and background information, too.
Yep, in the 80s and 90s, Jeff Stryker was huge in gay porn. In every sense.
So if you're a horror film fan, come and check out the Trilogy of Terror podcast at strangeanddeadly.com, or find it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or on your podcatcher.
One of those people that has a certain charisma and a certain style, and I'm just hoping one day he'll rub off on me.
The Trilogy of Terror podcast, where we try three times harder to give you the willies.
Welcome back. I'm here with director Patrick Rea. He has directed such feature films such as Nailbiter, which was released by Lionsgate, and Arbonne Demon, which was released by Gravitas Ventures. He has two films that will be playing at Scares That Cures Weekend 6. It's Held, Getting Old, and Rattle. I want to welcome Patrick Ray to the show. Thanks. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
What made you get into filmmaking?
I kind of started at a young age. I was actually, I grew up in Nebraska, a small town. I kind of just fantasized about making movies since I was a little kid growing up in the 80s. And, when I got into high school, I had this unique position where my high school had its own channel that broadcast to everybody who had like cable. So I just started making movies and airing them on my high school channel. And that's kind of how I caught the bug. And then I went to college. I ended up transferring out of Nebraska to the University of Kansas, making films there, and then never really left the area. I've been living in Kansas City now, since 2001, and just making my films in this area. So that's kind of how it all got started. So I'm very fortunate that I've been working in this area for long enough that I've, built a crew base that I work with, and a lot of actors that I work with are local and such. So
now, one of the forgotten arts of filmmaking is the short film.
Yes.
I notice in your filmography that you have over 60 films that are shorts.
Yeah.
Much.
Yeah.
What draws you to focus most of your directing on short films instead of feature films?
Well, I mean, and if you ask anyone who makes a feature, it takes so long. So I'm always developing a feature while I'm working on some short films. But for me, short filmmaking allows me to, take stories that really shouldn't be longer than 10, 15 minutes and tell those stories. Try out new cameras that are available, rather than, experimenting on a full feature, trying out some different equipment and I like being able to tell a story in a short period of time. I feel like, sometimes people's attention spans are a lot shorter now. So, for me, it's like, it's like Stephen King when he used to write little short stories along with trying to get a novel written. For me, it's like making a feature can take a couple years, and I like to be able to keep my storytelling abilities, try to make it, keep them sharp by making a short film here and there. And I just like making movies, and I feel like, when you do a feature, it just takes so long. It's such a long, long road that, for me, the short films kind of help me scratch the itch, a little faster, I guess, because ultimately I just want to tell stories. So
what are some of the differences making a short film compared to making a feature film?
Well, and it's funny because I'm reminded of that as I'm working on a feature right now. It's like a short film. You've got 3 days. You can usually get people to come on board for 3 days in a row, and you pay them, but you don't have to pay them. It just turns into a different scenario when you're thinking 15 days instead of three. Everybody's got to take a lot of time off to work on your movie when it's a feature, so you have to pay them well, and then you got to figure there's a lot more locations. You just need a bigger team. Short films, it's almost like it's kind of like a sprint, while a feature is a marathon. Cause, a short film, you're like, I gotta get this thing done in 2 days or 1 day or 3 days or whatever, but I gotta get it all in the can because people are taking work off. While with a feature, you're like, okay, I've got 15 days to shoot this. And then post-production can go on for a year sometimes. So, I just think that features are just take a lot longer and require a lot more manpower and a lot more of a time commitment. While short films, you can usually shoot in a couple days, and then you can take your time on post if you want, but you can usually get them done fairly quickly and get them out there. So that's the big difference for me. And obviously money, it's making a short film. So you can sometimes pull favors easier because you're like, well, people only dedicating a day or two to your project. With a feature, you gotta spend some money to keep people on board.
Now, which do you prefer personally, making short films or making feature-length films?
Man, that's a tough question because I like both. I know which one is a lot harder. For me, short films are, it's like immediate gratification in some ways, but I feel like the rewards of making a feature are much greater. Like, your film has a lot more opportunities to be seen, you know, as far as distribution is concerned. So I feel like when it comes to the rewards, once the film is finished and distributed, are much greater with a feature. But then I also like the ability to make a short film quickly and get it out there on the festival circuit. So I don't know. That's a tough question. There are definitely positives and negatives to both.
The first film I'm going to talk about, It's Hell Getting Old.
Right.
Which will be screening at the upcoming Scares That Cares weekend on August 2nd as part of the Side Splinters film short program that starts at 9:30. Tell me about that film.
Okay, well, basically, I wanted to make a short film that was claustrophobic, but had an all-elderly cast. So I basically found four actors that, you know, they're older. And the idea, it's kind of like they're stuck in this elevator together because they're on their way to their class reunion. And all of a sudden, it kind of takes a really strange twist and kind of something you don't see coming. And I had these actors in mind when I was writing it because they're all based out of Kansas City and they do a lot of theater. Like I said before, Kip Niven was one of the main characters, and he actually passed away a couple weeks ago, but he's kind of known for New Year's Evil. I don't know if you've seen that, the early 80s slasher movie, but he's the killer in that film. And then Joycie Appel, who was the villain in Nailbiter, I got her on board. And then I got another two local actors, Victor Wexler and Nancy Marcy. And we took 2 days to shoot it, and it was a lot of fun. It was fast, you know, but it's like almost like a stage play in some ways because they're stuck in this elevator and it's all based on their performances. And I don't know, like, the movie seems to get a pretty good laugh out of people, which is good because it was entirely meant to be a horror comedy. We just had a lot of fun.
What were some of the inspirations behind this story? As this felt different from other horror shorts, as the characters in the film my elderly characters, and you also throw in demonic possession as well.
Well, I, you know, one thing that kind of has always been an inspiration is that segment in the Twilight Zone movie called Kick the Can, which is all the elderly people in the retirement home. I mean, that was an influence. I mean, Cocoon is somewhat of an influence, but I wanted to do something with demonic possession and this elderly couple. So it was like, and obviously I'd seen movies like Devil and so I kind of wanted to do something that was a little bit of a twist on the whole people trapped in an elevator subgenre, you know? Obviously, I tried to cast the most innocent looking elderly woman I could find for this character who's possessed, because the audience would never suspect that she would turn into this thing. And it was just a lot of fun. So, as far as influences are concerned, I would definitely say Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt, that old TV show from the 80s called Monsters. I would definitely consider that an influence.
What made you want to set the story with the backdrop that it's their 50th anniversary class reunion?
Well, I was trying to figure out story-wise why these two couples would be, you know, it allowed me to create dialogue where they're kind of reminiscing and they know stuff about each other from the past. And it felt like, you know, the whole class reunion thing felt like the right, you know, they hadn't seen each other in years. It felt like the right setup for this particular story. You know, obviously they can't be going to like a concert or something like that. It's like, it has to be some scenario where they haven't seen each other in a long time. And so I felt like the class reunion worked the best for that as a plot device.
What are some of the differences working with elderly actors compared to young actors?
Oh, man. They certainly have a lot more experience under their belt. I found that they were very laid back, and, you know, between takes, they would kind of tell stories about films that they'd worked on in the past, and the crew, the younger crew would always sit around and kind of listen to their stories. So there's kind of like this kind of, they just got a lot of experience and a lot of stories to tell. And I feel like a lot of people could learn from them. And the different things they've worked on. I mean, like, Kip had worked on a ton of things. He'd been on, I think, Law and Order, and Victor Wexler was in, I think he was on Seinfeld, maybe? He was on some show like that, and then he was on in the movie Minority Report, and so, like, all of them had really good stories.
Now, the film takes place in an elevator. What made you want to set the story in an elevator?
Well, and this comes back to Blanc Bean. They were doing an anthology of stories where each story took place in an elevator. And so I created the script knowing they basically said, this is the anthology. We're making each story set in an elevator. So I decided to do a segment. So each story in their anthology that they're putting together is set in an elevator with different scenarios. And they're still working on the movie. And so right now I'm just kind of showing the film at film festivals until their full anthology is 100% done.
Now, how did you get to meet Jennifer Blanc Bean and Michael Bean on this project?
I cannot, it was the guy who was producing the anthology reached out to me, and his name was Lonnie, and he actually was working on several projects with them. So it was kind of, he emailed me and we started talking, and he had seen some of my work, and so that's kind of how it all fell into place. And I ended up meeting with Jennifer while I was out in Los Angeles a few years ago, and so that's kind of how it all fell into place. It's been so long, it was hard for me to remember exactly, but it was just kind of a thing where they just reached out to me.
Now, were they involved in any way of the production on set?
Nope. They let me kind of, they gave me free rein, and I just did my thing because I shot it all in Kansas City. So I worked entirely with my crew that I normally work with, and they weren't on set when we filmed.
How did you film the elevator scene? Was this something that was filmed on a studio set? Oh. Or an actual elevator.
It was on an actual elevator. So I knew that it was going to have to be a bigger than usual elevator. So there was a building downtown in Kansas City that had an elevator that was kind of like a freight elevator, but it looked nicer on the inside than like something you'd see in like a warehouse. And so I knew the owner and I talked to him, and I'm like, okay, so what we would do is we'd park the elevator on a floor and then open up the doors on one side and then, shoot through that so that it looked like, so we had extra room. So basically we always had the doors on the elevator open on one side to film. But it was a real elevator.
Is that a claustrophobic experience?
Surprisingly, not really. No, it was fairly, I don't remember feeling that way. I felt like it was, for some reason, every time I make a movie, I have a scene in a bathroom. And so, that's way more claustrophobic than this, I think. I felt like that was, all the scenes I've shot in the bathroom had prepared me for an elevator. And it was a it was a big elevator, so, and we had one side of it open, so it didn't ever really feel like you were trapped.
Now, for something completely different, you have another film playing at Scares That Cares. That's part of the Nightmare Fuel program that takes place August 2nd at 6 p.m., the horror comedy Rattle. Tell everyone about that film.
Okay, so Rattle is super short. It's like 2 minutes long, and it's kind of one of those things where I have two daughters, and I always wanted to make a little short film where, if anyone who has had a baby, there's moments where the baby is crying, and you're like, I have no idea why this baby is crying. I can't get this baby to stop crying. What can I do to, make this end? And of course, I always joked with my wife. I said, I wonder if they're seeing something that we're not. And that's why the baby's crying. And so, so the short film kind of plays on that. It's like these two parents are trying to figure out why their kid is crying, and and the dad is trying to like entertain the baby. And then turns out the baby is seeing something standing between them that they can't see. And, so, and it's creepy, but then it's also kind of funny. And I use my real daughter, Willow, as the baby.
What made you want to do a simple story like Rattle compared to some of your other films?
I mean, it was one of those things where I knew that it was, if I could get my baby to actually react the way that I wanted her to, that it would be something that would play really well at film festivals because it was short and sweet. By the way, my other daughter, Violet, is standing right here. She wants to say hi. Say hi.
Hi.
Okay. Hello.
It was just one of those things where it was a simple idea, and I've seen a lot of short films being made right now that are almost like on Crypt TV or Alter or whatever. They're almost like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and they're quick and they have a good payoff. And I felt like this one would be that. It was just going to be, I knew it was going to be tricky with the makeup, and it had to be good makeup, otherwise the payoff of the short wouldn't work. So I had a gal named Jackie Butler do the makeup, and it took her about 2 hours. It wasn't really that fast. I mean, it didn't take that long for her. I had a guy named Bob Barber as the guy who was in the makeup. He has been in several of... Do you know who Joshua Hoffine is, the horror photographer?
Not familiar.
You probably would recognize some of his horror photos, but he's been in... This guy has been modeled in several of them. And so I was able to get in touch with him, and because he lives here in Kansas City as well, and came in and did the... He just had to stand there and look scary, and he did a great job. But, you know, we shot it in my daughter's real nursery and stuff, so everything was there. It was one of those things where I didn't have to find a location. I had the location. I didn't have to find a baby because I had the baby, so it worked out really well.
Now, how long did this take to film?
This one took about 6 hours. I mean, if you were to add up all the makeup and it was about 6-7 hours probably. And then, you know, it took me a little bit longer to, I cut the film myself, and then, got it scored and colored. And then I think we went in and digitally removed his eyes, so his eyes looked completely black, because we didn't have contacts for him. And, so I had it put together really fast. And then I just started submitting it to film festivals. It had its premiere at the Nightmares Film Festival in Columbus, Ohio. And then it's been circulating. I think it's played at Horror Hound. It's played at the Bone Bat Horror Comedy Film Fest. It's playing at Popcorn Frights next. It's playing at, like you say, Scares the Care. So it seems to it's getting the rounds, and Fun Size Horror is going to be incorporating it into one of their anthologies coming up as well. So, it's exciting.
Now, what made you want to include your wife and your daughter in this film?
Well, I knew they would show up. my wife does acting as well. She's been in some of my short films, so that was an easy decision. And obviously, Willow, I needed a baby, and the trick was getting her to smile and cry that whole time. I felt bad because she wasn't ever in the same room with the creature, because I was just like, I don't want to scar her for life. So I'm like, let's just stand over her and kind of make her cry by just making faces at her. So, oh no, I can't remember. We might have been holding her bottle, and then like not giving it to her. I'm going to get in trouble now for saying all that. But she cried on cue, and then we had to actually start making her smile. And so it was tricky. That actually, I think that shoot was a little bit more claustrophobic than even the elevator, short film, because the actual nursery is smaller than the elevator. So we were in there with, the baby and the camera and trying to get all that shot and you can only film a baby for so long before they're like, all right, can't get any more out of her, Really only had like an hour to get the reactions I needed to get with her. My wife was available. So, and then I cast an actor named Chad Crenshaw as basically me. Though I don't think I ever explained the role that way. I never said, hey, you're playing me. I just said, you're playing a dad who's frustrated that he can't get his baby to stop crying.
Now, what was it like directing your wife and daughter?
It was easy for the most part. Like, my wife has worked with me enough now that, she gets kind of where I'm going with things. And the baby, obviously, it's not even really directing as much as just trying to get enough on film reaction-wise, just roll until, and then you're like, okay, well, we got maybe a 5-second snippet of her smiling that I can use in the cut, okay, we got... Getting a baby to cry on cue is actually surprisingly easy. The babies will just cry the whole day if you let them, So it's like, okay, we'll just film the baby crying, get enough of that footage, and then it was like, okay, now let's get her to smile and laugh and coo, and that was a little trickier. Without looking like she's looking right at the camera, because you have to make it look like she's, looking off camera at this thing that's standing where, looking at her. So that part was a little trickier.
Now, besides the upcoming screenings of Rattle and It's Hell Getting Old at Scares the Kids, what are some of the upcoming screenings for the film?
I'm not really sure. Rattle is going to be playing. I don't have another screening lined up for It's Hell Getting Old, but I do have another one for Rattle, and that's Popcorn Horror. And I think it's around this, and that's in Florida, and I think it's the same week. I just finished a new short film called Fused, and that one is going through post-production right now, getting the sound mix finished and all that, and that one's a little bit more straight-faced horror is not, it's not funny. At least I didn't intend for it to be funny, so hopefully it isn't funny. So that one we shot in over the winter months here in Kansas City, which were long and arduous. So I'm hoping to premiere that in the fall. And then I have a family feature that's coming out on DVD in August, called Belong to Us, which was shot here in Kansas City. And I think it's going to be in Walmart August 6th. So that's coming out. And then I told you earlier, I'm shooting a feature starting on Thursday, 15 days. And it is the opposite of a family film. it's a female werewolf revenge movie. So it's kind of a, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're getting everything lined up, ready to go. And then we shoot for 15 days and hopefully it doesn't get up to 100 degrees, 110 with the humidity if we're not.
Now, who's going to be starring in that film?
I have an actress. Her name is Kristen Vaganos, and she, you have to look her up on IMDb. She's fantastic. And she's playing the lead character. And then I have a lot of local actors that I've also cast. Kristen's out of Los Angeles, so she's flying in tomorrow. And I'm really excited about it. I have my usual production team on board, and hopefully we'll be wrapped by July, the end of July. So.
Finally, where can anyone find you on social media or on the web?
I am most easily found just as, if you just look up, I've got two Facebook accounts. I've got one for, just me, just my normal, friends list, but I'm almost getting close to 5,000. But, then I have a Patrick Ray, director, writer, producer page that you can find me on Facebook. So mainly Facebook. If you look me up, you can probably find me pretty easily. Patrick Ray, last name R-E-A. Feel free to send me a message or a friend request.
And do you have an official website?
I do not. I mean, I've been going through my social media mostly as my official website. My wife keeps telling me I need to get an Instagram account, and I haven't done it yet. So,
trust me, I've gotten an Instagram for this show. So.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I'm behind. I've been putting all my effort into the Facebook, you know, and it's been great, but I guess I need to get an Instagram at some point. So.
Well, it was very nice chatting with you, Patrick. Good luck with your success on those two short films and your upcoming films.
I appreciate it.
Day.
You too. Take care.
Have a podcast that you want to promote? Well, if you're interested in swapping commercials, you can promote your show here on Anthony T's Horror Show. And in return, I will promote your commercial on my show as well. For more information, contact me at AnthonyT'sHorrorShow@gmail.com.
Hey guys, this is Stephen Christina. I'm the founder, owner, creator, and host of Super Retro Throwback Reviews. Are you looking for the best movie reviews, music reviews, video game reviews, and Comic-Con coverage all around? Well, then look no further. Definitely check out Super Retro Throwback Reviews on YouTube and our new audio podcast, the new and improved Super Retro Throwback Reviews Audio Files version 2.0 on the following media distributors: Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify.
Class is over, John. Time for something new and improved.
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm here with Michael Darwin, my co-moderator for the indie film panel that you heard a couple episodes back from ScareCon New England. He is here with me today to talk about the upcoming Scares That Cares Weekend 6 convention taking place in Williamsburg, Virginia, August 2nd through the 4th, which yours truly will be going for the first time. In fact, this will be the farthest I've gone from Rhode Island as well. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm fine, Anthony. How are you?
I'm doing very good here in Rhode Island. Tell everyone, how did you first come across Scares That Cares Weekend?
The first time I was at a convention for the Dark Discussions podcast was at the Horror Realm convention out in Pittsburgh. We had gotten a couple of press passes, and co-host Phil Perrone could not make it, and so he asked me to run out there if I'd be willing, and I said, what the hell? And I went out. It was my first time doing interviews, so I tried grabbing interviews with everybody. We were still trying to figure out the podcast at that point and what it was going to be. And we don't really do as much as the interviews anymore as we used to, but I was trying something different. And one of the things that they had at that convention, which you'll find in a lot of conventions now, is our representatives from Scares That Care. And the founder of Scares That Care was there, Joe Ripple. And that's how I met him. I interviewed him about the charity. The charity had only been around for, I think, this is in 2011, a year or two at that point. When I ran into him at the Horror Realm the following year, that's when he told me that they were planning on doing their own convention. And so that's how I found out about it. Really, was straight from the founder and chief operating officer, whatever his exact title is, of Scares That Care himself, Mr. Joe Ripple. And then that ended up happening in 2014, and it did well enough the first year that they were able to raise money to help the families in need that they were raising money for. And so, as long as it remains profitable, they continue to do the convention.
Now, what is the purpose of Scares That Cares, for those who don't know?
So, Scares That Care was started... Joe Ripple is a retired Baltimore police detective, and shortly after he retired, his partner's young child, passed away, and he thought there had to be something he could do to help. Now, Joe was a member of the horror community. He, as he likes to say, he's a fan of all things spooky. He had done security for a lot of conventions, so he had made a lot of connections in and amongst the horror community with both the celebrities and convention runners and things like that. And so he knew that the horror community had a lot of people that were good people, good-hearted people. We're a little weird, but, you know, we're not exactly what I guess people would expect on the outside. So he said, let me do something within the horror community to try to raise money for childhood illness. And so specifically wanted to pick a family that was struggling with a childhood illness in their family, with, you know, one of their kids, and raise money for them. And they picked a family a year. And it took a long time. Joe is a very deliberate person, a very methodical person. He knows his stuff. He wanted to make sure he did everything right, had all of his I's dotted, his T's crossed. So first they would raise money for them through Make-A-Wish, and then they were able to get their certification as a 504c3, and that meant they could donate directly to them, and they could give the money to the family. Then they expanded. They did what they called, Scares for Pairs, which is raising money for a woman dealing with breast cancer. And then they linked up with Kane Hodder's charity, which was raised money for burn victims. And so every year now they raise $10,000 for these three families. One family dealing with childhood illness, one family fighting breast cancer, and one family that is dealing with burns. And they've been doing that now. This is Scares That Care Weekend 6. Every year they've been able to fund that. Not a single person working for Scares That Care takes a penny in compensation. It's all volunteer. All the profit for the convention goes into funding the charity, which to be given away. They have very, very low overhead. Most of the money goes where they expect it to. Many times the recipients do go to the convention, though they don't like to draw attention to it because they don't want them being bothered by the guests. You know, they just want to be able to go there and experience it as a fan would. But not all of them can do it. Not all of them can afford to do it or really are into the whole horror thing. That's not how they do it. And then after those three families are paid for, then they look and see if they can get, you know, they take recommendations from the community. Do you know somebody who's dealing with one of these three issues? And they go look around and find somebody who can receive it. And they do still keep tabs and give us updates. After someone has been taken in by the Scares That Care community, you know, they let us know how they're doing down the road. The first child they helped sadly passed away, I think it was about 2 years ago, when Joe came online on Facebook and broke that news to everybody. But they do keep up on them. They don't just drop them after they give them the check.
What makes you want to continue to go to this convention every year?
There's a couple of reasons. One, because I feel a personal connection with the running of the convention, with the people, with Joe, with several of the organizers, like author Brian Keene, or Alfred Guy, or Mike Lombardo, who all help run the show. It's also just a different experience. I don't like massive conventions like Monster Mania, where it feels more like you're being herded like cattle. There's so many people there. Scares That Care is a relatively small convention of a couple of thousand people over the weekend. But it's also a little different because everyone is there for the charity, or just about everyone is. And so that always takes priority. People are aware of that. They do a lot of fun things to raise money for the charity, whether it is they have a 5K race, they have a silent auction, they have Joe's infamous brawl walk, which he does on Saturday night as he dresses up. Originally started as a bra, after 3 or 4 years, it turned into a corset. Last year, it ended up being an entire outfit. But he prowls the bar in this getup, and people stuff money in the bra, and all that money that they raise, and last year was something like $1,500. Ends up going to the person fighting breast cancer. And you've been to enough conventions, you start knowing the people there and getting to know them well. It's the fact that I know where the money's going. There are certain conventions, and I won't mention them now, that you know where expanded too quickly. They didn't keep track of their money. Maybe they had trouble paying guests. So there's a certain convention right now where a lot of celebrities have sworn off ever doing that convention because they're not getting paid. And that doesn't happen with Joe. He doesn't get great big guests like, say, Robert Englund or Bruce Campbell, because honestly, they cost a lot of money. And he'd have to make promises to them he can't guarantee, because, again, the main idea is keeping an eye on the raising money for the people who need it. So, like I said, I just enjoy it a lot. It's a small convention. It's a very intimate convention. Everyone is there and is aware of it, including the celebrities. Some of the celebrities will knock their prices down a few bucks from what you would see at another convention because they know it's for a good cause. Many celebrities donate money. Sid Haig from Devil's Rejects and House of 1,000 Corpses and many other films. He is a big supporter of the convention. He is there every year. He has given a lot of money to the charity. He wrote them a $10,000 check a couple of years ago. And he's somebody who's embraced. A lot of people will make sure they stop by his table to thank him every year, even though he's there. Every year, we've all seen him. We've all got his autographs. That's not what it's about. It's about seeing him, checking in on him, and saying hello and thanking him for what he does.
What is the atmosphere like at a Scares That Cares event compared to something like ScareCon New England?
I enjoy ScareCon New England, but ScareCon New England is, you know, a bunch of fans getting together. It's not all that different from most of the conventions I've been at. People are there because they want to meet celebrities, buy merchandise, show off their costumes, and which is all perfectly fine. I don't take issue with that. Scares That Cares, it really is more of a family. The people who go there make it a point to go there every year. The very first year they did this, I think it was scheduling forced. Was it Days of the Dead? I don't remember. There was a convention that moved it. Self on the calendar right opposite the first Scares That Cares weekend. And it was one of the bigger horror conventions. And whatever it may be. So basically everybody ended up going to that instead of going to the Scares That Cares 1 charity weekend. And that hurt. I could tell Joe's face that he did not get the turnout that he had planned for that first weekend. But where it benefited them in an odd way is, well, who couldn't travel to wherever it was, Illinois or Indiana, wherever the convention is? Well, there was families with small children. So what they ended up doing is getting a lot of families with small children coming to the convention. And as a result of that, it's kind of gotten this reputation as being a very family-friendly horror convention. They do a trick-or-treat every Saturday. I think it's Saturday. They have a zombie run for the kids on Sunday. They do rooms set up just for small kids. So if you have little kids in tow and you want to drop them off there, there's all sorts of games and activities they can do. They're being manned by volunteers to help watch your children while you can go out and do the convention stuff as well. And everyone tends to be very accommodating to that. So it's just that being that family friendly is also an interesting thing. It's not, I wouldn't say it's a huge difference in that. I mean, they love to party. They drank the bar dry a couple of years ago. They drank every last drop of alcohol on Saturday night that the bar had in stock. The hotel just didn't anticipate it, right? And this has been something, it's been at the same hotel, the Doubletree Hilton in Williamsburg, Virginia, has hosted it every year. And they've been very, very accommodating. They make sure everything is going well. They are very, very pleasant. I don't know if it's a case of Southern hospitality or just that particular hotel. You know, the hotel staff will dress up for the weekend, you know, in addition to decorating the hotel. They change the bar menu to have horror-themed food items available. You know, it's the same fare, just like Captain, instead of, you know, your normal chicken wings, it would be Captain Spaulding's chicken wings or something like that. So just those little efforts are nice, but the hotel sold out in like 20 minutes this year. After they first put it online on August 24th of last summer, it said for next year, August 24th, sold out in 20 minutes. Previously, I think previous year, it sold out in about an hour. Before that, it had been selling out in a week. It's just the people that go there really love the charity. They support the charity. We know where the money's going. Right. If you give your money to a charity, and I do not mean to denigrate any other charity out there, but you give your money to a larger charity like, say, the Red Cross or United Way or what have you, and they all do great work. I'm not denigrating them, but you literally know who it is that is getting that money if you donate to Scares That Care. You know who's handling the money, that you know the names of the people that run the charity. You know the people who are going to be handed that money. You know you have their names. You have a rough idea of where they are in the country. You see them, give them that money. Some cases you might have met them at a convention. So it's got a more direct connection. So it's a thing that helps you celebrate your fandom, but also makes you feel like you're doing good at the same time.
What are some things that I should expect, or some first-time people should expect when coming to Scares That Cares?
Well, there's stuff that goes with every convention, right? Which is that there's too much to do to experience in the 3 or 4 days. Officially, the weekend is the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. Unofficially, it starts Thursday night on the 1st. And this is something that started a couple of years ago. They do a pool movie at the hotel pool, if weather allows. One year they did Jaws, and the next year they did Piranha, and then the next year they did Jaws 2. This year, they're switching it up and doing The Thing, because we've got a lot of guests from John Carpenter's The Thing at the convention. So that's going to be there on Thursday night. But you have your films that you apparently just talked to. Who was he just talked to about that?
Patrick Ray.
Patrick Ray, okay.
Yeah, he has a couple films screening at the convention.
Okay, and that's run by Mike Lombardo, who books the film track, who did I'm Dreaming of a White Doomsday, and I know you talked about that film with him a few months ago. You have your author's track. Now, the author panels and everything set up is something else I think that's a little different from a lot of the conventions, that there are a lot of authors there. This is run by author Brian Keene. Brian Keene gave up his table to put more authors there. He doesn't sell anything there, but he runs everything. He brings all the authors in. They have readings by the authors. They have panels by the authors. Some of the authors there, probably the best well-known name, most well-known name right now is Jonathan Mayberry. But you also have Josh Malerman, who wrote Bird Box, Maurice Rodos, I don't know how to pronounce his name, C.V. Hunt, Raph James Wright, Patrick Lacey from, you know, formerly of the Dark Discussions podcast. A lot of others are there. So, and they're treated just as any other celebrity is. They got their own in the celebrity room. They've got all the writers set up as well, so you can meet them, talk to them, get buy their books, and get them signed, or talk to them for advice. You have your Q&As with celebrities. You have your typical signings. You have your dealer's room. Actually, you have a downstairs dealer's room and an upstairs dealer's room. And then out in the main lobby, running through Friday and Saturday, is a silent auction. A lot of people donate things. And I know when Joe runs a convention or works a convention, he often gets a lot of autographs from celebrities that he can raffle off at some point. Unique Scares That Care merchandise always goes well. You know, there's like every convention has their annual t-shirt, but lots of glasses. Last year they did light up pens. You'll see what else they bring along this year. So
now, one of the big things that I've been noticing about Scares That Cares is they're always referencing Joe Ripple, the promoter with a llama. What's that deal about?
Yeah, that's something that started this year. One of the people on Facebook showed a picture of Joe sometimes can get his unhappy face, you know, which is usually clowning around. He has fond of telling people to shut their ass. But he posted a picture of Joe making his unhappy face and a picture of a llama and said that Joe looks like an angry llama. And that just started turning into a running joke on the Scares That Care Facebook page. And so people now just started spamming the page with all sorts of links to llama merchandise and pictures of llamas, pictures of Joe superimposed on a llama, all sorts of weird things. And so now they have a dedicated llama thread. Joe may be doing a llama-themed photo op. He did a photo op last year, which would only cost $10, and all the money went to the charity. A lot of the celebrities do their own photo ops. Do you know Father Evil?
Yes. Is he going to be there? Because I heard something.
Yeah, he is going to be there. He is going to be there this year. He did a $20 photo op last year and gave all of that money to the charity. However many people signed up for it, let's say it was 60 people, then that's, you know, was $1,200 that, or minus whatever the cut of the photographer was, you know, went straight to the charity. So anyway, so Joe is not beyond, there's nothing Joe will not do to raise money for the convention. He will do anything to embarrass himself, to humiliate himself, if it will bring more money to the charity, to the convention, and to help the people at the convention have a better time. You know, so he's worn a shark suit out at the pool film. I mentioned the brawl walk. The brawl walk started because at first convention the turnout was poor and he wanted to get more money. Well, one of the celebrities there was Cassandra Peterson, also known as Elvira. And so they said, why not get a bra, get Elvira to sign it, and then we'll auction it off. And so they got the bra, got Elvira to sign it, got it signed by every one of the celebrities at the convention. And they said, well, how are we going to get people to know about this? Because it was literally a last-minute thing. It was something they decided to do either Friday night or Saturday afternoon. So Joe came out at the end of the costume competition, and I strongly recommend going to see the costume competition. There's some great stuff there. And he came out with the bra and told people he was wearing the bra. He was going to be wandering the bar and let people stuff money in there. And if my memory serves correctly, I put the first dollar in the bra. But that's how that started. And right, he did it. He was willing to risk a little bit of embarrassment just to help some raise some money for a woman who could use some help. So this year, llama seems to be the theme, and we're all going to see what happens.
I heard they were doing a llama coin.
Yeah, so last year, I think it was last year or the year before, they did a challenge coin for Scares of Care, and so this year he's selling off, they're making a llama coin that has Joe's catchphrase, shut your ass, on the flip side as a challenge coin. They're only making 100 of them at $20 each, you know, so 100 coins, $20, that's $2,000 minus expenses, so probably close to $1,500 they can raise for the charity through doing that.
Now, this convention has a lot of really good guests, and one of the big guests at this convention is Keith David from They Live in the Thing. And speaking of the Thing, there's a big Thing reunion as well with Wilford Brimley.
Yeah, I'm running through the guest list right now. Thomas Waits is another one, and Joel Polis. So there's those four, and they're going to be doing
a photo op
there. Keith David was originally going to come last year and had to cancel. You know, unfortunately, that's the reality of any convention. There's always last-minute cancellations, but, you know, that means usually they're working. On occasion, Sid had to cancel one year. Sid Haig canceled one year because of health reasons, some people for family issues, but usually it's because they're working. Dee Wallace has had to cancel a couple of times because of work issues. You know, she ended up getting a job at the last minute. But they always try to get, if it's not too last minute, they always get someone in to substitute. But yeah, they have a lot of great guests. Again, I would be wary. You know, they don't necessarily get the very biggest names, because it just requires them to make promises, right? They need guarantees. If you're getting in Robert Englund, you know, you probably have to guarantee him $10,000, $20,000. And they can't do that.
Crazy.
And
I can understand.
Right. So the two who are always there are Kane Hodder, because again, he's working with the charity. The burn victim aspect of the charity was something that started because of him. And Sid Haig. But there's always a nice mix of different celebrities. Another one always there is Count Gore Duvall, who's a Maryland horror host and has been doing this for 30 years or so, and he always MCs the costume competition. You've got Joe Bob Briggs this year, who's also going to be doing a photo op. You've got
Harry. He's also doing an event too.
Oh yeah, he's got an event.
Let's not forget that about that.
Yeah, he's doing a show Friday night, and I think it was $20 to get into the show for probably, I think, a 2-hour show. He'll have his assistant, what's her name again? Do you remember?
Darcy.
Right.
Darcy the male girl.
Darcy the male girl is going to be there, and she'll be in there for the photo op as well. Henry Manfredi, who is the composer for Friday the 13th, is going to be there.
You got a mini Jason X reunion.
Yep.
With Kane Hodder and Christy Angus,
yep.
I believe, which is probably the greatest guilty pleasure film of all time, my opinion.
There you go. You got a...
But that might change after I see Glenn Danzig's Veronica. Because I've heard that's like the Room of all horror films. So get back to me after that film.
There's a Monster Squad reunion. Duncan Ragar, Carl Theobald, Tom Noonan, Michael Reed.
Ashley Banks.
And I think one of them canceled. I don't remember which one.
Yeah,
one canceled. All right. And they also have, for fans of Aliens, they have Jeanette Goldstein, who played Vasquez, and Mark Rolston, who played Drake. We'll both be there. Now, I said Jeanette Goldstein had done a lot of James Cameron stuff, like, you know, Terminator 2, Titanic, and was, of course, the matriarch in Near Dark. So I'm looking forward to meeting her. Again, they have their own photo op, and there'll be somebody there in an alien costume for the photo op. One thing I really like about the lady who does the photo op for the conventions, and I, sadly, it's killing me because I can't remember the name of her company. is that she does customized backgrounds for the photo op. So you take in, for, instead of, you know how most photo ops, you have the white screen?
Yes.
With,
yes.
With just the repeating logo over and over again for the convention or whatever it is. So this, she usually does custom backgrounds. So, like last year they had Costas Mandalore, we were talking about Saw before we started recording, had a professional photo op, and so there was a backdrop of, a green screen backdrop of, what do you call it? Of an abandoned warehouse for Sid Haig was, you know, sort of a hellish carnival in the background. They had a Sons of Anarchy photo op, so you had sort of a desert backdrop for that. So you get a customized backdrop, which is always a really nice a nice touch. I'm just looking it up. It's Patrice Kennedy Murillo, I know, is the woman who does it, and I'm trying to see what the name of her business is, and this is really embarrassing. I should know for anyone who's interested. So anyway, yeah, so that's something I'm looking forward to. And again,
yeah, they also have a Captain Spaulding photo op at this convention.
Yes.
Very neat.
Right, and this is the second time he's done it there. Indulge Images is the name of the company that does it. So if you know anybody who does a convention that's looking for a professional photographer, I highly recommend Indulge Images. But right, so Captain Spaulding, Sid Haig is there in makeup for the second year in a row, and I know he had a hell of a long line last year. I'm hoping he has a similarly long line this year. And again, a lot
I might actually get that photo op.
Yeah, well, because then you could put it up with your Art the Clown photo op.
Yes, that would be something. Another photo op I think we missed was also Sarah Butler's photo op for I Spit on Your Grave, the remake.
Yep.
She's having one too as well. We don't want to forget her neither.
That's true. So yeah, and if you look at these films, you know, you obviously have Monster Squad, The Thing, and Aliens, which are all from the 80s. But Captain Spaulding is, you know, more recent. The remake of I Spit on Your Grave is more recent. They try to hit a lot of different periods. They don't just focus on one aspect of horrors or what have you. A lot of it just depends on the celebrities who can agree to come and what their schedule is, and who's willing to do a photo op. I did The X-Files a couple of years ago. They had a photo op with William Davis, cigarette-smoking man, and the actor who plays Skinner, whose name is escaping me.
Mitch
Pileggi. Yeah, so they had them. So, again, they'll have a variety of guests. They don't just cater to one particular thing. This year it happens to be very heavy on 80s horror.
Which is a good thing.
Which is.
Because it's always fun when it's 80s horror, because there's a ton of films you can go with when booking a convention on 80s horror, which I like.
Well, there's that. It takes a while for some of these celebrities to realize that they can make money on the horror convention, so if you just did a horror film that came out this year, you might not realize it.
Actually, there's a guest that is coming to Scares That Cures that recently did a horror film.
Yes.
The new Halloween, the kid.
Yeah, Jibril Ntambu. I apologize if I butcher his name, but he was the young child being babysat around the middle of the film, which was, for a lot of people, a highlight of that film.
And another thing that we forgot to mention, that this will also be the first convention appearance for Leah Bedlam from The Shining as well.
Right, she was the naked lady in The Shining. Well, how old is that film now, right? That film is 39 years old, and she's just getting around to making her first convention appearance.
I never watched The Shining until last year, after seeing that scene in Ready Player One, when they go into The Shining,
yep,
the main characters.
Yep.
I had to see what this film was about, because how Spielberg made it kind of one of the focal points of the film.
So,
and that was, after you.
No, go ahead.
It was like a great sequence, seeing that, the whole thing with the blood coming out of the elevator, and of course the craziness that happens out in the garden.
Yep.
Really drew me to want to seek that film out. And I'm glad I did, because I'm kind of excited actually for its sequel this year.
Yes, Dr. Sleep. With Ewan McGregor, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that'll be interesting, because have you seen the trailer for it?
Yes, I have. It looks very good.
Oh, and they're very definitely leaning into the imagery from the movie.
Which is probably a good thing, even though it had it, from what I heard, I think it's convincing from Stephen King to do that. Because I don't think he didn't approve of Kubrick's version of it.
Yeah, I know he doesn't approve of it, but you know, it's, and I understand, I've read the novel, so I understand his issues with the changes, but it's still considered a classic film, and it's the version of his story that however much as he doesn't like it, people know best. And for something that's being, it's another movie, people are going to look for those visual touchstones, you know, that you don't need to worry about when you're doing a novel as a sequel.
True. And it's being directed by Mike Flanagan, who's probably one of the hottest directors in horror right now.
Yeah. Mike Flanagan started with, what was the name of that film? Absentia?
Yeah, something like that, yes.
And then did, like, Oculus and...
Which is a very creepy film.
And then he did the TV series, The Haunting, right, for Netflix.
I think The House on Haunting Hill or something.
Right.
I don't know. Something like that.
And the Home Invasion film. I'm blanking on it now.
Gerard's Game?
No. It was with the deaf woman.
Hush, I think.
Hush, right. So, and Ouija 2, right? Didn't he do Ouija 2? Or
yeah,
Enemy Evil?
I think he did that as well, but I didn't even bother with the first one, so I didn't bother with that one.
Oh, apparently he was the editor on Gerard's Game.
Oh, okay.
Was he also...
That's why I was thinking Gerard's Game.
Oh, no, he also directed it. I didn't realize he directed it. Okay.
So, that looks like an exciting film coming out.
Yep.
Now, give me two of the guests that you're excited to meet at this convention.
Well, one we haven't mentioned, I'm anxious to meet is Pruitt Taylor Vince, who was in Jacob's Ladder, Constantine. He's recently in Stranger Things. He was on Walking Dead. Right, he played, what was it, Otis?
Otis, yes.
On Walking Dead back in season 2.
Yes, season 2, yes.
So he's an actor, that I've just always liked, you know, as a character actor, and I've never met him, so I'd like to meet him. And then just, probably the top of my list would end up being, would be Keith David.
Now, for me, one of the people that I've been wanting to see ever since the Shudder show is Joe Bob Briggs. And I almost did it when he came to New Jersey, but never had the time to go there. So I can't wait to meet Joe Bob Briggs, because I think his show is great. It is really something for a show like The Last Drive-In to be successful on a streaming service in this day and age where everything is thrown together all at once. And the other one I'm really looking forward to meeting is Wilford Brimley, because I really think he's one of the greatest character actors that we have. He's done some really good films such as The Firm and Cocoon, so I'm really excited to meet him for the first time. So I really can't wait to meet those two. And also, finally meeting Father Evil after hearing everything about him.
But by the way, if anyone's going or is interested in going, if you want to buy the photo op, if you want to buy tickets, they have their website, scaresofcareweekend.com. Scaresofcare.org is about the charity itself, so you can go to that website. But for the convention itself, is scaresofcareweekend.com, and there will be links to go buy, to buy the tickets for anything you're interested in. For the prices. One nice thing that Joe does, if you go to the Facebook page, the Facebook group, Scares the Care Weekend, Charity Weekend Facebook group, is he does have a thread with the prices of the autographs for the celebrities. So what are they charging for an autograph? What are they charging for a selfie? What are they charging for, you know, the combo?
Yeah, which is always a good thing. I always love it when conventions do this, because I've been to conventions where they will not give you the price for any of the guests.
Well, they kind of have to do it now. When I started doing conventions, rephrase that, when I started doing horror conventions 8 years ago, it was like $20 for an autograph. I had gone for over a decade between conventions. And so when I had last gone to conventions in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was you pay the fee to get into the convention, and then whoever was there, you could stand in line and get the autograph for. Yeah, but then you would have the... autograph lines would be hours long, and then eventually just switched it to lowering the price at the door and letting people buy the autographs from the celebrities directly. And like I said, about 7 years ago, 8 years ago, it was $20 for almost everybody. If you had a bigger name, it might have been like $30, $40, maybe $50. Now everybody is, you know, very, very few people are 20. Almost everyone's 30. I noticed Kane Hodder's up to 50. Sid Haig has held the line at 20. He always holds the line at 20. He swears he will never raise it past $20. And it's $10 if you bring your own thing to get autographed.
Yeah, I have a Devil's Rejects DVD autographed by him, because he was at Tarakon a couple years ago. Now, before we end this conversation, when you go to Scares That Cares, always we need to let everybody know to make sure to respect the staff. And don't stop throwing things all over the place. because that's how problems happen with conventions.
Usually people are very good there, and because of the charity thing, the fans tend to take some ownership in it. If they see somebody kind of disrespecting the hotel and leaving trash outside, a lot of fans will say something and complain about it. I know that there's been issues with the hotel saying you have to make sure there's enough garbage outside for people. Because, you know, if you get a lot of people standing outside the door smoking, those cans can fill up really quick. And the hotel really goes out of its way to help people out. They're always very polite. The only problem we've ever had is for about 3 years in a row, the fire alarms went off, usually because people were smoking somewhere they weren't supposed to be. But that hasn't been a thing now for the last 2 years, so we're keeping our fingers crossed and hoping it stays dead. But yeah, and one of the things that Scares the Care was kind of on the forefront of was making sure you respect the cosplayers. You know, not only should you be asking permission for photographs, but, you know, make sure you're not getting grabby and handsy just because someone is in a provocative costume. It is not, cosplay is not consent is the slogan. They have stuff hanging around there. It's not that they don't want you to have fun, but we don't want your fun coming at the expense of someone else.
Yeah, we don't want any of that happening, because that's disgusting.
Right.
And also, if you don't set off the fire alarm, because you will probably get banned if you set off the fire alarm. Because saw a video yesterday from Joe stating he'll ban you.
Yeah, I would. Well, yeah, he'll do that. He takes his. When you look at it, you have people there. You've been to enough conventions. You'll see people at conventions in wheelchairs and people with walkers or canes. And if you're in a hotel on the top story and a fire alarm goes off at 2 in the morning and you've got to make your way down the stairs because the elevators don't work when the fire alarm's going off, that's a real inconvenience. If it goes off, as it did a couple of years ago, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a hot Virginia day, and people are stuck standing outside with no shade, and which, by the way, is also eating into the time that people could be spending on the vendor's room or spending money with the celebrities and authors, that also is going to make it a not-fun weekend for everybody and not a productive weekend for everybody. You know, we like the convention to go smoothly. I keep mentioning Joe Ripple. He's got a very, very large, not very, very large. He's got a large board of directors, a lot of staff and volunteers that work very, very hard to get everything going. Joe is sort of the face of everything. He is the CEO of Scares the Care, but he couldn't get it done without all these people, you know, working with him and carrying a huge portion of the load, whether it's technical stuff or just manning the doors or you know, running the merchandising booth. And those people work their butts off to make sure everybody has a good time.
Well, I want to thank you, Mike, for coming on to the show. I can't wait to see you at Scares That Cares New England. I mean, Virginia, why am I saying New England?
Wrong convention.
Wrong convention, Scares That Cares in Virginia. No, I'm not going to a New England convention in August. It's in Williamsburg, Virginia, not in the New England area. Can't wait to be up there with Phil also, so.
Yep, that's it's Williamsburg, Virginia. It's officially August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. The event really kicks off Thursday, August 1st, with the thing showing at the pool. You are right next to Great Adventure, I think it is, amusement park. You can see the roller coasters from some of the hotel room windows. It's probably within walking distance, if you don't mind the Virginia heat. You know, so if you want to make spend a few extra days there and hit up the historical Williamsburg or go ride the roller coasters, you can do that too.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on to my show. Oh, Michael, one more thing. I just forgot.
Yeah.
Where can they find you?
The podcast. I was going to say they can find me sitting on my couch right now. They can find me on the Dark Discussions podcast or on the Dark Discussions podcast Facebook group. And you can either find it on Google Play, on Stitcher, on iTunes, any place you
get your
Spotify, any place that does podcasts, you can find Scares the Care. Dark Discussions. Sorry, first day of summer school. My brain's a little fried.
No, I've been going crazy today with all this news.
So, yeah, so you can find us there. And there's also the Dark Discussions website. We have, if you count all the spin-off podcasts for Game of Thrones and Westworld and American Gods, there's over 400 episodes for you to listen to free of charge, you know, and, you know, we please invite you to listen in, and if you enjoy, subscribe. If you don't, let us know why and what we can do to improve.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on to the show, Michael. Have a good day, and I'll see you in Williamsburg, Virginia.
I will see you there, Anthony. I'm looking forward to it. I'll be happy to welcome you to the family.
Well, thank you, and have a good day.
You too.
Besides Anthony T's horror show, you can also listen to these other fine podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. Doc Discussions, hosted by Philip Perrone and Michael Darwin. You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast. Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast. Halloween Boutique, Psychotronic Reviews. And Searching for American Gods. You can find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And Doc Discussions is also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find Anthony T's Horror Show on social media on these platforms. Facebook at facebook.com/AnthonyT's Horror Show. Twitter at www.twitter.com/AnthonyT's Horror. On Instagram at www.instagram.com/AnthonyT's Horror Show. On YouTube at www.youtube.com/AnthonyThurber. And you can find Anthony T's Horror Show on the web as well at anthonytshorrorshow.blogspot.com. And you can also find Doc Discussions at www.docdiscussions.com. Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. I want to thank Patrick Rea for stopping by and chatting about his films It's Hell Getting Old and Rattle, which will be playing at Scares That Cares Weekend 6 in Williamsburg, Virginia, August 2nd. I also want to thank Michael Darwin from Doc Discussions for coming on the show as well, previewing this year's Scares That Cares Weekend, as that convention will be taking place August 2nd through the 4th. If you want to donate to Scares That Cares, you can go to their official website, www.scaresthatcares.org, where you can donate money and also find some more information about Scares That Cares. Now, here's my film recommendation for this episode. Now, for my film recommendation this episode, I wanted to focus on a film from one of the guests at Scares That Cares Weekend 6. And it's also a film that I was not happy to see not get a Blu-ray release when the official San Diego Comic-Con announcements for Scream Factory were announced. As there was a rumor going around maybe a couple days before San Diego Comic-Con where Scream Factory announced some Paramount titles that they will be releasing in the upcoming months. I was not happy that April Fool's Day did not get a Blu-ray release from them. I'm hoping in the near future that Scream Factory does a Blu-ray release of this film, because I really like this film a lot. The first time I discovered this film was at a Hollywood Video going out of business sale, where I was pretty much looking to see which films would be interesting enough for me to take a look at, since I think they were like around 50% off at the time, and I kind of stumbled upon April Fool's Day, so I grabbed it, and I was very surprised with this film. But this film also has a Scares That Cares Weekend 6 connection, as one of the film stars, Clayton Rohrer, will be at the convention. I apologize if I pronounced the name wrong. But it's a film that I really love a lot, and I don't feel like it's gotten the love it's
deserved. Because one of the things that I really enjoyed about this film was the screenplay for this film. The writers do a very good job in creating characters that are interesting, not the typical type of characters that you would see in a slasher film, where you see all these people like pottying and stuff. Even though they have that to some degree, there's also a serious tone to them, which I liked a lot. But what makes this film very good was the fact that this film is very ballsy in the way it chooses to end the film. I'm not going to talk about the ending, but it's still to this day one of the ballsiest endings to any horror film out there. The film also has some very good performances from Amy Steele and Deborah Foreman. Fred Walton's direction was also very good. I like how he does a very good job keeping the action moving, whether it's the way he directs his cast to the way that he makes sure that it has a fun tone to it while also having a really suspenseful tone, as it does a really good job at being unpredictable, which is very good for a horror film. I like films that are kind of unpredictable, and I have to say the ending to this film was one of the most unpredictable endings to a horror film, period. Now, some interesting facts about this film that I found on IMDb.com. Actress Amy Steele and producer Frank Mancuso Jr. were also involved with Friday the 13th Part 2, which was released 5 years earlier in 1981, as Amy Steele was the star of the film, and Frank Mancuso Jr. was the associate producer on that Friday the 13th film. He would also go on to produce a couple more Friday the 13th films as well. Now, this was one of three horror films that were released in 1986, which took place on April Fool's Day. The other two films are Killer Potty and Slaughter High. In 2008, there was a remake of April Fool's Day, which was released direct to DVD. Never checked the film out because, well, I heard a lot of bad things about it, so it wasn't worth my time checking the film out. So definitely stick with the original 1986 film, as this is a very good film and it has one of the best and shocking endings to a horror film that you will ever see. And that's why April Fool's Day is my film recommendation this episode. Now, on the YouTube channel over at Anthony T's Horror Show on YouTube, I recently did another edition of Anthony T's Uncensored, where I talk about the whole fiasco between the Saska sisters and Twitter. And just to say, I'm not very happy with Twitter, but I'm going to make you go to the YouTube channel to check it out, because if I start talking about this now, I'm going to start using bad language, and I don't want to do it this episode, especially since this is a Scares That Cares preview episode. So you're only going to hear this rant over on Anthony T's Horror Show on YouTube. You can go to youtube.com/AnthonyThurber, T-H-U-R-B-E-R, to listen to my rant about it. I will have another edition of Anthony T's Horror Collection next week. Originally, it was going to be this week until the whole Saska Sisters in Twitter situation happened, and I wanted to do that as the exclusive video content for that week. So Anthony T's Horror Collection will be up early next week. On my next episode of Anthony T's Horror Show, I've got a ton of news that I have to get off my chest. So I don't know if this is going to be a guest next episode. Depends how recording goes for all these news segments, because I can guarantee you I have at least two segments worth of news. I also have some old news that I didn't put up on YouTube, like a proposed Tellraiser TV series, and why that might be such a dumb idea. And also, I'll talk about Terrifier 2's success on Indiegogo next episode as well. Plus, I'll go into news about the new Halloween films and all the happenings at San Diego Comic-Con, including two major properties that haven't been talked on the show. So get ready to hear my thoughts on these two major properties that I haven't talked about yet on the show. So episode 26 is going to be heavy on the news. So I can't guarantee right now if there'll be a guest. So check back on Anthony T's Horror Show on Facebook and Instagram to find out if there's going to be a guest. If I don't post anything, then assume that there will be no guest next episode. With that, I want to thank you for listening. Have a good day and support indie horror.